turn to Exodus
chapter 2. And our title today is on the screen, Preparing and Calling Leaders. And we did, a few weeks ago, we did talk about the basket, the ark, and the only other place it was found, and one of those interesting connections was with Noah. And that's one of the things that Exodus does for us. There's all these Christ connections and different things, all these types we've talked about. And we spoke about also last week, Moses taking matters into his own hands. He knows his identity, and others know his identity as well. It's clear from the scriptures. It doesn't come right out and say it, but reading the passages, the context reveals that others knew who he was as well. And so as he is looking upon one of his Jewish brethren, and they're being beaten, remember what he takes into his own hands. He wants this change to take place. He wants a change in the way Egypt is treating his brethren, his heart. God is doing something with his heart. And so he kills this Egyptian. And being a member of Pharaoh's home, he probably could have gotten by with killing this Egyptian servant had it not been for the reason behind the killing, which was an act of rebellion. Because he wanted a change. And so what does Moses do? He tries to hide it. He covers it up. He buries him in the sand. But somebody always sees, remember, but particularly the man that was being beaten, the Jewish man that was being beaten, he saw. He knew what happened. And so the next day when two Jewish men are fighting, he intervenes and he questions, why are you angry with your brother? Why are you doing this? And one of those God connections that we saw, one of those Christ connections, when the man said, who made you prince over us? Remember, 1,500 years later, the same would be said to Jesus. Who made you king over us? And so even the Jewish people, knowing most likely his identity, probably had some hostility focused towards Moses. Who do you think you are? How do you know what we feel? How do you know our angers? How do you know what disappointments we face? How do you know the burdens that we carry? Because you grew up in Pharaoh's home. And so what happened is Moses runs. And his running will take him away from the palace to a tent in the desert. And instead of having a place full of servants, a clean, beautiful place, he has a tent and some sheep and goats and a whole new life. Moses is on a 40-year journey. God is doing something with him. But while he's doing something with Moses, he's also doing something with others as well. Don't ever think that the experiences that you're having alone. Because you're not. It always affects others as well. So at the end of chapter 2, changes are taking place. And I want you to also realize this, that most often change comes over time, not overnight. We want it to come overnight. When we're not feeling good, when we're in a bad place, when we're having trials and troubles and tribulations, we want them to come to an end now. But that's not how things normally work, is it? So change most likely or often comes over time, not overnight. And that's what the Israelites are experiencing, and that's what Moses is learning while he is in his first desert experience. Personally, I have to say this, that dealing with change over time, that is, certain changes coming more slowly than I would like, than you would like, most likely, I think has always been one of my biggest challenges. I'm not a very patient person. I'm probably more patient today than I have been ever in my life, but patience is not one of those things that I practice easily. Especially when we're in a place, or when I'm in a place that's uncomfortable. Or when we have unanswered questions, or when we feel threatened in some way. We want God to hear us. And we want Him to hear us now, and we want Him to respond now. And that's kind of the God that most of the world, at least in our country, expects to have. You know, when someone says that, hey, God loves you and He wants the best for you. I saw this great video, and the guy said, hey, that's terrific, because I want the best for me too. So God's going to do what I want Him to do, right? Because I know what's best for me. That's not how it works. So we want God to hear us and bring change now, but His timing doesn't always align with our wants and desires, does it? But I think they do align with our needs, whether we realize it or not. I love this statement. It's in poetic form, Isaiah 55. And you know these verses. Verses 8 and 9, for my thoughts are not your thoughts, neither are your ways my ways, declares the Lord. For as the heavens are higher than the earth, so are my ways higher than your ways, and my thoughts than your thoughts. God does things His way, not our way. And so here's our first point for the next 2 weeks. Is it up there? Evidently, I confused my wife. We're getting our signals mixed up. God does hear the cry of His people. And in that cry, He is forging leaders. Sometimes when we're hurting, we wonder if anyone is listening, watching, or taking notes of our needs, of our desires, of just how bad things are. And sometimes when it gets really bad, when we're in distress, we wonder if God hears us. If God is paying attention. This is when we begin to ask all the why questions which surround whatever troubles we have. Why me? Why us? Why now? Why not another? And it all comes back to why me, Lord? Why, Lord? Why, Lord? Those of you who have children, have you ever had your kids say, why? Why, Mama? Why, Daddy? And parents normally have a great response. Because I said so. Right? God is sovereign over all this. I'm sovereign here. Right? That's kind of the mentality. The question is, how long must I suffer, Lord? Many will not only question God, but they might also begin to question His love and His existence. Even those individuals who have given the appearance of serving and loving God all their lives. For those who grew up in the church. How long have you been a Christian? I've just always been a Christian. I was born into the church. Right? We're there every Sunday. We're there every Wednesday. We're there whenever. I've just always been a Christian. That's some of those that have that thinking. But I think it's natural to question when we're hurting. I think why questions are natural questions. You know, that statement by C.S. Lewis, not why me, but why not me. I just think it comes to us. It's part of our nature. It's part of our flesh. And I'm also thinking that God might expect it from us. I think God might expect us to ask the why questions. How about you? This is what I do know. I know that He can handle our questions. He can handle our questions in the midst of our trials and troubles. And I know that because He's God. And so briefly, let's just look at this passage. Because I told you I'd be done by 12, maybe. I might be done at 12 after, or 5 after 12 now. Maybe. Exodus 2, 23 and 25, Brian read for us. During those many days, the king of Egypt died, and that's an important fact. Because he died, he's the one that wanted Moses dead. Moses might now be able to return as prophet. But Pharaoh died, and the people of Israel groaned because of their slavery and cried out for help. Just because Pharaoh died, just because the king died, didn't mean that their burden was lifted. The one that followed continued the burdens upon these people. And remember, this isn't a short period of time. Moses is getting ready to come back. He's been gone a long time. Their cry for rescue from slavery came up to God. And God heard their groaning, and God remembered His covenant with Abraham. And I love that in your prayer today, Brian. Because God does remember His promise. He remembered His covenant with Abraham, with Isaac, and with Jacob. God saw the people of Israel, and God knew. What did God know? Did He just know about their suffering? Did He just know about their cries? Or did He know more? See, I think He did know more. He knew much more. Despite all the changes, despite the change in government, the slavery again remained severe. It was still there. And when we read that they cried for help, when they cried out to God, there is this picture of great sorrow, great grief, great oppression upon the people. Their agony was real. Their pain was real. It wasn't something that they were just imagining. When the people cried out and He heard their cry, not only did He hear it, but He saw it. He took notice of it. And so the wording here actually means that God heard, God saw, and God knew. In a very real sense, God was experiencing the pain with them. When you look at your child and they're hurting and they're suffering, when they have a broken heart or a broken limb, do you not hurt for your child? It would be unnatural, and some people do not have natural feelings, but most parents, I believe, have those natural affections for their children, and that it is only natural for you to ache when they ache, because you want something to relieve the pain. So God knew. He knew all about it. He knew the depths of their agony, of their pain. He was intimate with them, even when they were not intimate with Him. He was close to them, even when they felt far from Him. And He remembered the covenant. He remembered the promise. He remembered the promise of redemption. Remember the theme from Genesis to Revelation, and we see this microcosm of redemption in the book of Exodus. He is redeeming his people. Now here's what I want you to leave with. Look at verse 25 there again and what it says. God saw the people of Israel and God knew. Not only did he know their pain, their sorrow, did he have a sense of experiencing it with them, but he knew what they needed at the time. And he knew what it was going to take to get them out of the land of Egypt. He knew that it was going to take a leader that had some similar struggles and experiences of his own. And while God was dealing with the people in Egypt, he was also dealing with Moses. He was also raising some others up. He was also forging some other leaders, even though they were young, like Joshua and Caleb. Because these would be the only two adults who entered into the wilderness experience and as adults would enter into the promised land. Here's what I leave you with. Bald eagles, when they make their nest, if I read it correctly, I read this story about this particular bald eagle and her nest, her eaglets. And bald eagles mate for life, and so mom and dad are there taking care of everything. And it takes about 8 weeks before those birds begin to lose their down and they grow their feathers and they're ready to start to take flight. And so mom and dad will, when it's time, they'll go get the food and then they'll dive towards the nest and the birds are ready to eat, but then mom and dad will swoop back up holding that food. And they're hungry, and this goes on for several days. And then mom and dad might swoop up and come close to the nest so that the birds will get close to the edge of the nest, waiting for the food, and they're reaching for it. And this one particular one where the camera was, the eaglet fell out of the nest and all of a sudden began flapping violently, began to fly, and he made it to this cliff. And what did Dad do? Dad dropped the food there for the little one. The little one had to become uncomfortable first, had to become hungry. And mom and dad were doing the things that were necessary to get them out of the nest and on their own so that they could take care of themselves. And they gave them little rewards and incentives along the way. They put that little carrot in front of them. Sometimes that's kind of what God does for us. There are some other birds that will line their nest with sharp things, and then they'll put soft foliage and other things on top. And when it's time for the birds to leave, they'll start pulling the soft foliage away so that it makes the nest uncomfortable. See, here's what we know about the Israelites. That even though the burdens were harsh, for 430 years it was home. And even when home stinks, sometimes people don't want to leave because that's all they know. They would much rather stay with what they know than venture out and take the risk and trust God. And so these people had to come under the burden, because we know that once they crossed the Red Sea, Once they got out into the wilderness experience, they were so overjoyed, right? This is me being sarcastic, church. What did they do? They complained. Why did you bring us out here, Moses? We would have been better back in Egypt. Sometimes God takes the time to let us suffer through certain things as He is preparing leaders and other things for us that will be better in the long run. Now I've gone. I didn't lie to you. I said maybe. But here's what I know. We've had our wilderness experience, all of us, and this church has had its wilderness experience, and I think that we're coming out of that. But you may personally be suffering with a wilderness experience. You may personally be suffering under bondage, some torment, some trials. And here's what I want to encourage you to do. Hang on. There is hope. And that hope is in Jesus Christ.